Okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody. We're gonna make a start. It's great to have you here. It looks a bit like it's gonna rain to me outside. Hopefully, it's not. I'm sure your tents are fine. Do not worry, budumch. The reason I want to do the seminars is there's a number of reasons. One is a really personal one, which is that part of my own story is having to deal with and process anxiety. So I don't know how many here have struggled with that, but I suspect it's probably a few. For me, it started about 3 years ago, and I found myself in a meeting at our church, just leading this meeting, and suddenly I felt this real sort of massive tightness on my chest. And I thought, this is really weird. This doesn't feel normal to me. And I remember leaving the meeting, making it to the end just about, and then leaving and sort of ringing Mike, who was away, and just saying, hey, I'm a bit weirded out. I've just had this thing going on. And in the end, we chatted, and I ended up having some time off. And I thought I would bounce back. I took like 10 days off or something. I thought, oh, don't worry, I'm just tired. I'll bounce back. I'll be fine. And took time off and actually ended up getting worse rather than better. And long story short, I ended up speaking to someone who's a doctor, and they said, you've got anxiety and you need to take some proper time off work. So I ended up getting her a month off work, seeing a counselor, and trying to work out how on earth has this happened to me. And then sort of beginning a process of kind of like a journey towards freedom from that. But it was quite a journey. As I look back, I don't regret going through it, because I feel like I learned an awful lot of stuff that's really, really been good for me to have to learn. And it wasn't all bad. Like, one of the things that happened when I had my month off work is my brother found out about it, and he bought me a PlayStation 4. That's right. I had been trying to convince my wife to let me get a games machine for the entirety of our marriage. And so, tip number one from this seminar, if you live with someone who won't let you get a games machine, probably your parents, can I suggest having a minor emotional breakdown? Because you can say, look, I need FIFA and I need rest. These two things are part of my recovery journey. Anyway, so, but I've had to work through a lot of stuff. And obviously, as part of that process, I went to the Bible and I was asking God a lot about this and trying to work out, what does the Bible say about worry? And obviously, as a disclaimer at the start of the seminar, I am not a doctor or a professional counselor or anything. So that we need, some of us, when we're really, really struggling, if it's become something that is a medical condition, obviously, we need to seek help from people who are professionals in that sense. Having said that, as always, God's desire for us is for us to become fully alive and fully human. And so he speaks to all aspects of human life, including the area of worry. And I thought it'd be helpful, just as we begin, to define what are we talking about and what are we not talking about. So when we talk about do not worry, what are we aiming for and what are we not aiming for? What we're not aiming for is a kind of a zen-like state of utter calm that we just kind of like float through life on this cloud, never being disturbed by anything, because that's just completely unrealistic. Stress is a normal part of life, and it's an unavoidable part of life. It's part of what it is to be human. And in fact, stress is not always a bad thing. Sometimes stress triggers adrenaline. It triggers us to perform better. So we're not talking about this zen-like Buddhist monk state. Jesus, who's always really the model for us, Jesus cares deeply about things. So he weeps and he becomes angry and he's grieved about the state of the world that we're in. And so we're also not talking about this kind of state of indifference where we no longer care about what's going on in the world around us. But what Jesus does is, for all that he cares deeply about the people and the world around him, he is not full of angst. And although he experienced trouble, and there were moments where he was in anguish, actually, for much of his life, he's full of joy and he's full of peace. Jesus is the one who falls asleep in the middle of a storm. And that is what we're talking about. Having a state where we care deeply about the things that matter and where we're fully engaged in the joy and the suffering of our world, but where we're not living with this constant sort of sense of background angst and background anxiety. And so it can be helpful to kind of distinguish between what is a normal stress that just comes as part of being a human being that's alive and functioning in the 21st century, and what is this background sense of worry and anxiety that we're not actually meant to be living with. And so imagine it like this. Imagine you woke up this morning and whoever was cooking the chicken last night did not cook it properly. And you wake up and you are feeling, I don't know if that's happened, but it's not a laughing matter. But you wake up and you're feeling like, uh-oh, I have got I need the port-a-loo and I need it now. And that's a normal stress, all right? That's a normal anxiety. You'd be weird if you were like, I don't care that now I have got major diarrhea problems. So you run to the port-a-loo and you do your business and then you leave. And it's like job done, you know, the worry for you is over. For the person who's about to go into the same toilet, their worries are just beginning. But you are free of that now. That's a normal worry that you go through the stress of, you deal with it, and then you move on. But a kind of a background worry, a background anxiety, might be that you are constantly feeling anxious about your health. And any little niggle that you get or any pain, you immediately begin to feel or fear the worst. And your mind begins to rehearse thought of all these terrible scenarios that could happen. So that's a kind of background anxiety. A normal worry would be if you came home at the end of a day at school and your mum's in the kitchen and you think, oh my, I think she might be in a bad mood. And you say, are you okay, mum? And she goes, yes, I'm fine, while she's slamming pots and banging cupboard doors and, you know, being really passive aggressive. At that point, you'd be like, okay, I'm a little bit concerned. That's normal. You would have a conversation with your mum. You would find out what's going on. You maybe would apologize and then you'd move on. And that's normal part of life, right? But a background worry might be if you're constantly stressed about your relationships and you're constantly fearful about where they might be going wrong and you're worried that you may have offended people, that they might be talking about you. You see people over in the corner and you think, you know what, I think they're talking about me. You send someone a text message and then you're rerunning in your head, oh, did I say the right thing in that? Or you know, you're desperately and repeatedly in need of reassurance. So that might be a kind of like a background anxiety. So it's a really normal thing for a few times a day or, you know, various parts of the week for us to become stressed about something that's part of life. What we're talking about and what we want to try and address here is that background sense, like a fan in a shower room, just the constant thing there in the background. So it's the difference maybe between someone going and pouring a bucket of water over you, which would be a normal stress that runs off, or you standing in a swimming pool where it's kind of up to your neck and you're just kind of in there and it's uncomfortable, but you can still function, but it's not pleasant. Think about it like this. Imagine you're in the minibus and you're on your way to Soul Survivor and your youth leader about 20 minutes kind of after you pulled out sees someone hitchhiking by the side of the road. And because they're a youth leader and they're kind and compassionate, they pull over, they pick them up. And they're like, oh, I'm going to Soul Survivor too. Why don't you come with me? So you're all driving now. You've got this new randomer in the car with you. And within about sort of 10 minutes, you realize the youth leader has made a terrible, terrible mistake. But this person is one of the most irritating people you've ever met. They started supporting Man City when Man City started to win things. They fancy themselves as a worship leader. So within another 20 miles, they've got their guitar out and they're playing you some of their songs that they've written at the top of their voice. And you think, oh my word, I was looking forward to this journey. And now we've got 4 hours of this. And it's like they're not a murderer, as far as you know. They haven't done anything terrible yet that means you actually have to pull over and kick them out of the car. So instead, what you just have to do is put up with them being there, and they begin to suck all the joy out of the journey. Worry is like that. It sits in the car of our lives, and maybe it hasn't become so serious that it's tipped over into a panic attack or an anxiety attack where we really begin to treat it seriously. So what it does is it just sits there and it constantly sucks the joy out of our lives. And what God wants us to do is to become free of that. He wants to set us free. Jesus is a savior in every sense of the word, and he invites us into a life of peace. So that's what we're addressing. That's what we're talking about. I hope that makes it clear. And to kind of begin to think this through, I'm going to read a passage from Matthew. This is part of Jesus' famous talk, the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 25, he says this. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And so I find, as I read this passage, that there are really three steps for beginning to worry less and beginning to kind of journey towards a freedom. So if you are making notes, this is step number one. Step number one, recognize that worry is an enemy, not a friend. Worry is an enemy, not a friend. Remember, I'm not talking about normal stress of life. I'm talking about the worries as we've just defined it, this kind of constant sucking the joy out of our life, background thing. So one of the first things that Jesus begins to do is he talks about specific worries, and we're going to come on to that in a moment, but also he talks about worry itself. He attacks worry in general. So he asks this brilliant question, can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And another way of putting that is, what is the benefit of worry? What is the point of it? What is the use of it? It's that old thing about worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but you don't get anywhere. What is the purpose of it? And I remember when I was going through anxiety, reading this passage and thinking, man, Jesus is so harsh. He's so strong on this. So he says, do not worry. And it's actually a command. It's not an invitation. And so I felt really bad because I was like, oh my word, not only am I now worried, but now I'm worried about the fact that I'm worried because I'm feeling anxious. Now I'm feeling condemned because I feel anxious. And actually, if that's what we take away, it's because we've misunderstood the passage. So Jesus, he's not angry at worriers, those of us who struggle with worry. What he is he's attacking worry itself. And the reason I think he has to be so strong on this is because certainly for those of us who tend towards being a bit more at the worrier end of the spectrum, we can mistakenly begin to believe that worry is a kind of friend to us. And actually, if you stop and you think about it, has worry ever helped you? So I can remember, I was thinking about it the other day, various points in my life where I think probably if I'd panicked less, I would have done a slightly better job in whatever situation it was. So I remember the first time I ever asked anybody out. That is terrifying. You'll know if you've been there. But I remember I decided to do it in a swimming pool, which was probably in hindsight a bad idea. It was just the only lesson we had together, this girl and I. And so I remember I barely had spoken to her. I just sort of followed her from a distance for about 3 months. And I thought, this is it. This is my moment. So at the shallow end of the swimming pool, after a length of front court, I just turned to her across the little floaty thing and just said, do you want to go with me? And I was so terrified, I couldn't even articulate my words. And I'd imagined this moment many times and the look on her face many times. And it wasn't the look that I got, which was just confusion. And she just said, what? And I said, do you want to go with me? And then she realized what I was asking her. And the next look was one of pity. That's like the worst. I'd rather have had anger or something, but it was pity. And she just said, no, sorry. And fortunately, my friend Greg had no idea what was currently going on, that this was a massive moment in my young life. And so he actually, at that moment, swam up behind me and dunked me under the water. And so I just decided the best thing I can do in this situation is swim away underneath. So I didn't resurface. I just swam off under the water. And I spent the next 5 years of school never speaking to her again. Worry did not help me. Have you ever been in an exam where, you know, some exams you think, okay, there's no way I'm going to do well in this. But there are other exams where you think, do you know what, with this one, it kind of could go either way. It just depends on the questions. So I know if I get certain questions, I'll probably be all right. If I get other questions, I'm going to be absolutely stuffed. And you sort of sit there in that moment in the exam hall before they open up, they tell you to go on the paper and you think, which one is it going to be? Which way is it going to swing? And then they say, okay, you can look at the paper. First thing I used to do is just look all the way through the paper. Did I get the questions I was hoping for? And when it doesn't go your way, immediately for me, what would happen is panic would set in. So no longer, you know, instead of being calm and cool and collected and thinking, it's okay, Andy, it's okay. You can, if you just use your mind, you can reason through some of these and you might be able to do okay. Instead of that, what I'm thinking is, okay, the question is, when is the Battle of Hastings or something like that? I'm not thinking, when was the Battle of Hastings? I'm thinking, why is this question here? Something else comes up and you think, okay, what does happen when you mix these two chemicals? No, I'm thinking, why does the universe hate me? You get another question, you think, oh, wait, no, you're thinking, my mum will kill me at the end of this exam. And so we start to panic. Again, worry is not helping us. But so many of us subconsciously begin to believe that worrying is a good thing. And so we tell ourselves things like, see if any of this sounds familiar to you. We tell ourselves things like, when I worry about problems, they are less likely to happen. If I worry, the people I love will be safe. If I worry, people won't leave me. If I worry, people are more likely to like me. If I worry, I'm more likely to be successful. We tell ourselves these things, and what happens is worry ends up becoming this destructive friend that we want to keep close, even though it's affecting us. And Jesus, as a starting place for all of us, and I know some of you, you're already way past this as a starting place, but Jesus, as a starting place for all of us, wants us to recognize, no, worry is not helping you. It is an enemy. It is not a friend. This is why I think he says it so strongly as a command. Do not worry. It's like if you were to see a friend of yours begin to, you know, take some heroin or something like that, and you saw them just starting to do that, and you knew what a destructive thing heroin was, and what you would do if you saw them just over on the other side of the table doing it, you would slap that out of their hand, and you would say, don't touch it. And it wouldn't be an invitation, please don't touch that. It would be like an order, get away from that, because I know that's going to destroy you. Well, Jesus is responding in the same way with worry. He's saying, don't go near it, because it's going to harm you. So, step one, recognize that worry is not helping us. It's an enemy rather than a friend. Step two, if you're making notes, this is the second point. Work out your specific worry areas. Work out your specific worry areas, because worry is something that is common to all of us, but it has a different flavor for each of us. And so the things that I worry about may well be different from the things that you worry about and vice versa. And it's a really helpful exercise to begin to understand yourself and begin to understand, well, what are the triggers for me? What are the things that really cause me to worry, that really cause me anxiety? And so in this passage, that's what Jesus is doing. He's focusing on particular things, what they're worried about. So what they're going to eat and what they're going to drink and what they're going to wear. All of us will have our own version of those particular things. And a picture that I find helpful to have that back in my mind, I'm just going to pick up this fake plant, is to think of like a worry as like a plant, like a worry plant. And with worry, you've got two things. You've got, first of all, what you worry about. And then secondly, you've got why you're worrying about it. And really, the goal is to try and get to the why that sits beneath the what. And so if we were to take, for example, the passage, let's say the surface level worries, the things that cause us worry or anxiety are like the leaves of the plant, okay? So we could write on this from the passage Jesus just did, they're worried about, number one, what they're going to eat, number two, what they're going to drink, number three, what they're going to wear. So those are three surface level things, but there's a why that's deeper behind it, and we see it as we read the rest of the passage in the way that Jesus reassures them. He says to them, your Father knows what you need. And so the why for them, particularly because they lived in a farming culture, a subsistence culture where your food was dependent on whether the weather was good enough for you to have a harvest and many other things. They were worried about what they were going to eat tomorrow. So, but the why was really this question of, my Father doesn't care enough for me, or my Father doesn't see me, or I can only depend on myself. That's the root. And what we want to try and understand is, what's the root of my worries? What's the worry behind my first worry? It's joining the dots between your surface level worry and the deeper concern or the deeper worry that sits behind that. And so let me give you another example. I read a story a little while ago about a girl who she was super anxious about what she was going to wear that for her was like much more than a normal kind of level of anxiety about it. So she would go to a party, but before that she'd be stressing for a week about what am I going to wear at this party. She would ring her friends to double check that she wasn't going to be wearing the same thing. And it really caused her a huge... And by the time she ended up at the party, she was emotionally totally drained because she put all this emotional energy into kind of working out what she was actually going to wear, what her outfit was. And we might think, okay, that's the what. So we'll write that on a leaf. You know, what you're going to wear. But the why was really the important question. So why for her was that particularly causing her anxiety? And as she did a bit of work on this and she processed it herself, she traced it back to an event that happened when she was little. And it was when her mum and dad dropped her off at primary school. And it was one of those days at primary school where it was like a no uniform day. But her parents didn't get the memo. So everybody else in her class turned up in their normal casual clothes. And she turned up in her school uniform. Now, for lots of us, that probably wouldn't upset us too much. But she just had this horrific day at school where lots of the kids were mean to her and they were taking the mick out of her for what she was wearing, the fact that she was wearing school uniform. And so in her head, somewhere inside of her, she began to associate wearing the right thing with being safe. And so the surface worry for her would be, what am I going to wear? And then there might be other things like, is my makeup sorted? Is my hair looking good? But then beneath that, you can think, oh, well, that's just superficial. That's just a surface level. But the real root of it is, if I look okay, I will be safe and accepted. And if I don't, then I'm in danger. The reason why you want to get to the root is because unless you address the root, you're not really addressing the real thing. So if I were to draw my own version of a worry plan and I was to put the what on the leaves and the why on the root and reflect on that, for me, I would have on the leaves some of the stuff that stresses me out and has stressed me out over the years. Number one, exams, like more than normal. I could never understand. I had friends that didn't seem to care how they did in exams, and I was always obsessed with how I would do. So that would be one thing, exams. Another thing that stresses me out, this, giving talks, it really does. And so I can become obsessive about, is my talk going to be good enough? Is it going to be okay? And so that would be another leaf, another what for me. Another third thing would be fear of failure. I'm terrified of failing or looking like an idiot in anything. And so what that means is I often don't try new things. Unless I'm sure I can do it perfectly, I won't even have a go. So those are my what's. But the root of that, as I've reflected on it and got to understand myself a little bit better, the root of that is that deep down inside, there's a thing in me that is this lie that I believe, unless I am successful, no one will love me. And so for me, the real key is, am I being successful? However I define it, whether that's giving a talk or it's an exam or it's, you know, not failing at something. The reason it's so helpful to understand that that's the worry behind my worry is because if I don't, then I can address the worries, but I'll only ever address them at a surface level. So I might think, okay, giving talks stresses me out. It might be, if giving a talk stresses me out, that I am doing the wrong thing for a living. So maybe I need to change what I'm doing for a living, and I could, instead of preaching, so I'll just rip this off, I won't have to worry about that anymore. Take it off the plant. But instead of doing that, maybe I could be a personal trainer or something like that, although I'm not having much success with Mike on that. But maybe I could be a personal trainer and then I won't have to give talks anymore. And I might think that that would address the real issues. It's not, though, because what would happen is my root is, unless I'm successful, no one's going to love me. So after a little while, do you know what would happen? A new leaf would just grow back out of the same root. But this leaf would be, unless I'm the best personal trainer in this gym, unless I'm successful and everyone that I work with finds improvement, then no one's going to love me. And the worry would just come back. It would just come back in a slightly different form. So it's helpful to think about, okay, what are my specific worry areas? And maybe get someone to help you reflect on, someone who knows you and understands you well, maybe a friend or a youth leader, to help you process what's the worry behind your worry. So, the third step, the final step, but I'm going to unpack this for a little bit longer, is give yourself some practical tools to help you. So number one is worry is an enemy, not a friend. Number two is understand why are you worried? What are your specific worry areas? But number three is give yourself some practical tools that will help you with this. So hearing this, we can think, okay, that's great theory. All right, I understand that I'm not really meant to worry about stuff anymore, but that's not actually particularly helpful, is it? You know, I remember seeing this thing doing the rounds on Twitter that said, never in the history of calming down has anyone actually calmed down by being told to calm down. And that's true. You know, The Lion King, I haven't seen the new one yet, but there's that song that Timon and Pumbaa sing, Hakuna Matata. It means no worries for the rest of your days. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm stressed, if I'm anxious and worried, and Timon and Pumbaa come up to me and start singing Hakuna Matata, I don't know what I'll do to Timon, but Pumbaa will get barbecued. Because that's not helping. It's just so annoying. Like, just don't tell me not to worry. That's not useful. And Jesus, thank goodness, is much more practical than Timon and Pumbaa will ever be. And so from not all from this passage, but largely from this passage, there are four questions that I think we can ask ourselves when we find ourselves in a place of anxiety or worry that might help us deal with it a little bit better. So here's the first of the four questions. Question number one. What are my priorities? What are my priorities? And this question is really about understanding what's going on in my heart. Why am I worrying in the way that I'm worrying? And so what Jesus says in the passage is he says, rather than worrying about these things, he says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So I'm going to give you something worthwhile being concerned about to replace the thing that you are concerned about, which shouldn't be your top concern. I remember a few years ago, Pokemon was a thing, and I'm sure it's a little bit of a thing now, but it was mad, right? Do you remember when the app came out? I think it was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And I noticed that during Soul Survivor, during the festivals, at the start of the week, people were running around like headless chickens trying to find Pokemon everywhere with their phones. And gradually, as the week went on, what happened is that happened less and less and less. And I couldn't work out what was going on until finally the penny dropped and I walked into Cafe Uno and I saw all these young people sitting opposite each other, eating cheesecake and gazing into each other's eyes. And I thought, that's it. They've fallen in love. They were interested in Pokemon for the first 2 days until they bumped into somebody in basement. And then they were like, why am I chasing a Charizard when I could have you? And they started chasing something that was worthwhile, something that was interesting. So they were worried about the Pokemon until something more important than the Pokemon came along. And then they started worrying about that. That can be a helpful way of understanding how we can deal with worry when it comes. So it's like, okay, what are the things that I'm worrying about? What are my priorities? Why am I so stressed about this? And then for me, one of the ones almost always is because I want people's approval. It's, I want to give a talk, but really the reason this talk is stressing me out so much is because I want everybody to love me, and this is the way that I'm trying to get it. For you, it might be, you know, because I want to make sure no one abandons me again, or because I need to make sure every relationship is under my control. Or I just need everyone to think that I've got it together. But what's my priority in this moment? And then bring in instead, once we've identified that, what Jesus says, which is, hey, instead of stressing about that, why don't you make this the main thing, which is my will and my kingdom. And that, it doesn't sound practical. I promise you it is. And as part of processing that, another thing that can be helpful, still on the same question of asking what are my priorities, is to take some time to just sit and be. And this kind of frightens us when we're worried and anxious, because what we can think is the best thing I can do when I'm feeling super stressy is distract myself. That's how I process and deal with worry. So I think, uh-oh, I'm anxious. What I need to do is find a box set on Netflix and just watch it till 3 a.m., you know? And then maybe the worry will go away. But what happens is maybe you find the same thing. The box set finally comes to an end. Not only are you still anxious, but you're now knackered because it's 3 a.m. if you're watching Netflix like a full-time job for 10 hours. And we try and distract ourselves away from it. It's a more helpful approach to engage with it and to sit in the worry. And so think about it like this. Imagine if I scooped out a glass of water from the local Stafford River and I put it here. Now, that water would probably look pretty gross because it's got all this dirt and all this sediment floating around. Then I sit the water on a stand. Gradually, not straight away, but gradually after a little while, the law of gravity takes effect and all that dirt and all that mush that's floating around in it just sinks to the bottom and the water becomes clear. In the same way, our lives, they're like a dirty glass of river water, because we're rushing around like crazy. We pack our day full of noise, you know, Instagram, everything's going, so we have so little time to process our own emotion. Then you stop and you sit and you just be for a while without any agenda, just to be and just to think, what's going on inside of me? Gradually what happens is the law of spiritual gravity begins to take effect. And all that stuff that's churning around in you starts to slowly sink to the surface. And then things become a bit clearer and you're actually able to answer the question, what are my priorities? Not based on what you think they should be, but what's going on in you emotionally. Oh, I'm just so afraid of what all those girls think of me. Oh, I'm just so terrified about what my dad's going to do when he finds out. Oh, I'm just fearful that my future is bleak for whatever reason. I don't have a reason. I just know that that's the thing that's scaring me right now. But when it settles down, you're able to answer that question more clearly. So take some time just to sit and to be and to reflect. And then once we've identified it, say, Lord Jesus, I want the things that you say matter to become the priorities for me afresh. That's the first question. What are my priorities? Here's the second one. Second question to ask when you're feeling anxious. Am I living in the present? Am I living in the present? And so Jesus says, I love this verse, Matthew chapter 6, verse 34. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And all of these questions, I'm not saying you need to smash every single one. I'm just saying maybe there'll be one of these questions that for you would be especially helpful to ask. But this question about am I living in the present, for me, has become a really useful question to ask, because the answer almost always is no, especially when I'm anxious. Living in the present is not something I do very well. I remember when Beth and I were dating, there was a time when she came to visit me, and I was walking her back to the train station. We lived in different cities. I was walking her back to the train station, and I was going to miss her. She'd been around for a couple of days, and I was a bit bummed. We had this long-distance relationship, and so it sucked a little bit. And so as we were walking back to the train station, I was in a really foul mood, and I can do pretty good foul mood. I was really, really moody, and it was because she was going to go, and I was going to miss her. But then we got to the station, and she turned to me just as we were waiting for the train to pull up, and she just said, Andy, have I done something to upset you? Because you just seem, you know, really awful. And I said, I was surprised she asked me. And I said, no, you haven't done anything to upset me. She said, well, why are you acting like such a git? And I said, oh, it's because you're about to get on a train, and I'm going to miss you when you go. And she just looked at me like I was an idiot. And she said, but I'm still here now. I've been with you for the last 45 minutes while we've walked to the train station. So why don't you wait until I'm on the train and then get moody? Why are you ruining the last sort of like 45 minutes, hour that we've got together by being moody in advance? And then a couple of days later, she sent me a present in the post, and it was a watch. And it came with a little note that she sent with it. And it just said, this is to remind you to live in the present. So she's a genius, because she can be both kind and passive-aggressive at the same time. And yet that's what I need to be reminded of frequently, to live in today rather than the worries of tomorrow. And the reality is, worry is something that is about something that hasn't happened yet and may never happen. But we're living as if it has, or as if it's going to. And what Jesus is saying, I think, in this bit about don't worry about, you know, each day is enough trouble of its own. Don't worry about tomorrow. Worry about today. Is he saying shift your attention from all these things that are in the tomorrow that you actually cannot control, and instead put your focus and your energy and your attention on the things that are in today that you actually can affect. And so as part of my journey with learning to do this better, there's a little tool that I came across that has helped me, which is basically, again, for some of you, this is not going to be helpful, but for others, perhaps it will be. What I do sometimes when I'm really struggling with like just lots of angst, and I'm not really sure why, but I just know I'm feeling full of angst. What I'll do is I'll draw two circles on a piece of paper. And one circle I call the can-do circle, and the other circle I call the can't-do circle. And then I will make a list of all the stuff that is stressing me out. And sometimes it's a really long list, but literally anything I can think of that's causing me a little bit of stress, I will write on this list. Then I will divide the list into the two circles. what of the things that are currently stressing me out can I control? Can I affect? So those things go in the can-do circle. What of the things on this list have I got no control over? Those things belong in the can't-do circle. What I generally find when I do that is that almost everything that I'm stressing about goes into the can't-do circle. It goes into the circle that I cannot influence at all. And then very occasionally there'll be something that falls into the can-do circle. I can actually affect this today. Right now, today, there's something I can do about this worry. Sometimes what happens is things go into kind of like things are divided between the two. So let me give you one example. One of the things that causes me anxiety is now that I have kids, I'm worried about what's going to happen to them when they go to school. You know, like for the first few years of their lives, they have been around dad and mum virtually for the whole time. So I'm in a playground, some kid comes and even looks threateningly at my son, and I will start flexing my muscles and standing there really aggressively to against like a four-year-old who's threatening my four-year-old. I go into super protective bear mode, right? But one of the things that concerns me is what if he ends up in school and his teacher's having a bad day and she just unloads on him? Or what if he gets bullied or picked on and there's nothing I can do about that? So that's a worry, that's a fear I have about the future of my kids. What do I do when I've got the can-do and the can't-do circle? I say, okay, I cannot affect, as much as I would like to, who Josiah ends up being friends with. Have you ever had your parents tell you who you're going to be friends with? It's a surefire way to say you will never like those people. So I can't affect that. I can't affect his teachers. I can't affect... All of that stuff has to go into the can't-do circle. There's nothing I can do about any of it. But what I can do is today, I can tell him I love him. I can tell him I'm proud of him. I can hug him. I can teach him self-defense, as if I could do that, because I've got no idea. If someone ever starts a fight with me, I'll just be dead in a few minutes. But it's like, there are some things I can do. So I'll put those in there, and these other things I can't. For me, with talks, which I said is one of the things that stresses me out, what can't I do? I can't decide whether everyone in the world is going to love me on the basis of this talk. I cannot decide whether this talk will be better than the last talk I gave, because I'm a perfectionist. It always has to improve. I can't do that. What I can do is I can spend a couple of hours trying to write a talk today. That's all I can actually do. And I can go to bed and get some rest, so I'm fresh to give it tomorrow. That goes in the can do. And so what most of us end up doing, without realizing it, is that we spend loads of our emotional energy on the stuff that we can't actually affect, the can't-do stuff, and then very little of it on the can-do stuff. And what we want to try and work at is flipping that around so that we spend the majority of our emotional energy on those things we can actually affect now, today. Am I living in the present? Question number three that it's helpful to ask yourself. Have I prayed about this? Have I prayed about this? And I'm conscious, even as I say that there may well be, certainly for those of you who've been in church for longer than a couple of weeks, an internal eye roll that goes in your spirit. Have I prayed about this? Not such a Christian thing to hear at a Christian seminar about worry. The reason we react like that, and I almost hesitate to put it in, but the reason we react like that is this. We do not understand the power of prayer yet. We just don't get it, if that's how we react. And what we're told in the scripture, Peter says this, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. I love this verse. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And the thing about the can't do circle, or all those worries that we can't really affect, is everything belongs in God's can do circle. The whole lot. There's nothing that's outside of his control. There's nothing outside of his influence. So what we, as Christians, we don't have to be like, look, I can't affect Josiah's future or whatever it is that's worrying you. So I just have to say, Hakuna Matata, what will be, will be. Actually, as people, as Jesus's people, we say, I can't affect these, but I know somebody who can. And I'm going to go to him, and I'm going to commit this worry to him and commit this concern to him. And if you're anything like me, the way it works is this. You have something you're worried about. Let's say it's how your friends are going to treat you when you turn up at the party. That's something you're worried about. What I do is I say, all right, I need to pray about this. I need to cast this anxiety onto him because he loves me. Jesus, I'm really worried about this. I'm going to give it to you to worry about so that I don't have to worry about it anymore. There we go. We've done that little transaction. And then I'll sit for about half an hour. And after half an hour, I think, do you know what, Lord? I'd actually really rather take that back. And I want to carry on stressing about it for a little while. And then I'll realize I've done that. And I think, oh, my word, I've taken it back. I need to give it back to him again. Okay, here we go. And I'll give it back to him as many times as I need to. Usually I take it back 7 or 8 times. But as many times as I need to before I really have committed it to him and to his care. And when we understand that prayer is something God wants us to do, that when we worry about something, he wants us to bring it to him, then it can shift around. So Josiah, when he was younger, what he used to love to do is play hide and seek. But because he was tiny, he didn't understand. He thought basically if he went like this, you couldn't see him. He was invisible. He worked on the process that if I can't see you, you can't see me. So usually the way that he would hide is he would just go like that. And I remember on this showground once, we were in a little room where we prepare, and I was holding Josiah, who must have been about 1, 1.5. And Mike came into the room, and he said, "Where's Josiah? Where has Josiah gone?" And Josiah, while I was holding him, suddenly buried his head in my shoulder and just hugged me really tight, because that was his way of hiding. And I remember saying to Mike, "Don't find him for a little while," because I'm loving the fact that he has just pressed himself really close into me. As a dad, I just love that he's like, he's holding me tight. And that's kind of what I'm talking about when I say pray about the worry. It's that pressing in to God. And so think of it like this. Every angst and every worry becomes an opportunity for closeness. It becomes an opportunity to press into him. And so rather than seeing it always as a negative thing, oh my word, I'm never going to be free of this, actually you can say, another day where I just have to press closely to my Father and ask him to help me. Another opportunity to be near to him. Final question is this. Who am I processing this with? Who am I processing this with? So what are my priorities? Am I living in the present? Have I prayed about it? And who am I processing this with? We've talked enough, I won't repeat it, over the last couple of days, that we're meant to do this and we're made to do this with one another. And obviously, you might find it helpful if you're really struggling to process it with a professional. But for all of us, really, we want to look to process it with a friend as well, at least one. And think about it like this. We all need to have, the way that I heard one person put it is, we all need to have lightning rods. And the purpose of a lightning rod, when it's attached to a building, is that when the lightning strikes, the idea is rather than striking the building and destroying it, it's attracted to this lightning rod, and the charge, all the power that's in the lightning, just gets discharged safely into the earth. What I find is, when I'm angsty, I'm sure you're all very nice when you're full of angst, but when I'm angsty, I'm like, zzz, 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 and the next person that I can meet, I can just be like, you know, and just blast them with all this internal stress and all this internal pain that I'm processing. And rather than doing that, what's a really helpful thing is to have a few safe people that I know I can go to when I'm feeling all the angst, and I'm feeling all the stress, and I can just, as it were, discharge. I can just sort of say to them, this is all the stuff that's going on in me. And they know me well enough to just sort of sit there and nod and listen and not freak out and then just say, you know what, I understand. One of those was Mike, and always has been Mike. When everything was kicking off with my little boy Caleb, I used to ring him all the time, and I used to say, Mike, I'm so angry. I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand why our prayers haven't been answered. I'm so furious. And what Mike used to do is just listen to me and be with me. And then he would reflect back, Andy, I'm not in the same place as you. I can't appreciate it in the way that you do, but I get it, and I know it must be horrible, and I know it must be hard. It took me years in my marriage to work out that Beth doesn't want me when she sits and cries sometimes at the end of a day and tells me how horrible things are. She actually doesn't want me to give her a solution. I mean, I was like, for the first 6 or 7 years, I was like, look, darling, I understand you're upset. Here's my 3-point plan. They all begin with the same letter. If you do these 3 things, this will not be an issue for you anymore. And I was so confused that she would get more angry rather than less angry and more teary rather than less teary until I realized actually someone giving you a quote-unquote solution is not always the most helpful approach. Sometimes you just need someone who'll sit and be with you. And we want to do that for each other. But it's a really helpful question to say, who are the people, who are my lightning rods, who I can go to, I can vent to, and at the end of it, nothing's changed, but it feels like it has. You know that old saying, a problem shared is a problem halved? It's true. It's true. And what I'll say to finish is that this is a journey. It doesn't happen overnight, this kind of level of freedom. It doesn't come straight away. I'm 3 years into the journey, and there's still stuff that I'm really struggling with. But there is stuff, a lot of stuff, that I'm much freer than I've ever been in. And when we understand that constant angst is not a friend, it's an enemy, when we understand what is going on inside of us, like our particular worry plant, whatever your version of that is, and when we get a handle on some practical tools that can help us, what we find is, as we walk with God, is that he brings us into a place of peace, where you can actually put your head on the pillow at the end of a day, close your eyes, and be at peace. Why don't I pray? We're out of time, and then we better stop.